Okay, we're live. Hey, Supernaturals. It is your favorite host of all time, Beverly Hines. I am the host of the Supernaturals podcast, and I am the CEO and founder of HairScripts, the platform that is connecting women with varying levels of hair loss to dermatologists, trichologists, and other hair restoration specialists for treatment and support. But today, we have a very exciting guest, and I'm really excited to talk about her and talk to her. Her name is Dr. Joy L. Ballard. She is a board-certified OBGYN. She is here to talk about the WAP, honey, okay? And if you don't know what a WAP is because you've been living under a rock, which if you're on Facebook right now watching us, you are not, we are here to talk about vaginal health. And I know you're wondering, well, this is HairScripts. Why are you talking about vaginal health? HairScripts, we talk about hair loss a lot, which is typically a symptom of some underlying issue or something that is more deeper than just hair. But we are mostly underlying what we talk about is women's health. We talk about all things health and wellness. And so I'm really excited to have you on here. So we asked our community, and I just got to let you guys know this really quickly. We asked our community to ask some questions because you were our first OBGYN. And of course, everyone wanted to talk about the WAP, but we're all over the place with these questions. So it's going to be a lightning round today, guys. We're not going to talk about anything specific in detail, but please comment down below if there's something that you want us to go into granularly, because Dr. Ballard will be with us again. So enough of me talking. Dr. Ballard, please start off with introducing yourself. Tell us about your years of experience. How did you get to this point, your journey? And just give us the rundown.
Yes, thank you so much. I'm so excited. And vaginal health, you know, that's my jam. I mean, you know, that's what I do, right? So I am, like you said, Dr. Joy L. I am a board certified OBGYN and a perimenopause health coach. I have been in private practice for 13 years, which is crazy to me. But actually I took a leave of absence most recently because of the pandemic. And so I can homeschool my three children. So right now I am a homeschooling, full-time homeschooling teacher. But certainly like I said, I've been in private practice, and I actually became more passionate. Especially, obviously, I love taking care of women, speaking to women, empowering women, especially about their health, because our health is our wealth, ladies. So I definitely want to empower women to be more proactive about their wealth, and just take the appropriate steps to get there. And I became a lot more passionate in regards to this menopause, perimenopause space because of my own journey with starting with these dreaded night sweats at the age of 39. Ooh. So, girl, I was a hot mess, literally.
Okay. Oh my goodness. We gotta go into a lot.
Yes, yes. So yeah, so that's why I'm passionate about at this point. So yes.
Yes. So before we go into these questions, I have to be selfish and ask for myself because you're here. So I don't know if it's TMI, you know, but I'm a little, you know, I'm not a, you know, a spring chicken no more, you know, you
right?
Because it don't crack. But so I'm like, you know, hold on, she's getting real hot. we're not there yet. So what's going on? Like the heat, I'm hot and cold out of nowhere for no reason.
Right.
What's really going on? I'm 35, by the way.
Yes. Yeah. So yeah. And that's what a lot of women don't know. So perimenopause. So everyone knows about menopause, right? Like menopause, like, oh yeah, the hot flashes, menopause. Menopause essentially is when women stop having periods altogether for 12 consecutive months. That's when you're menopausal. Perimenopause means it's around menopause. So you can actually start to have menopausal symptoms, and that can start as early as the late 30s. So, you know, 35, you're kind of heading in that direction. So as our hormones are like fluctuating and going on this roller coaster, essentially, it affects our regulation in regards to our thermal, you know, thermal regulatory system in our bodies. It can cause us to be, you know, hot sometimes, cold sometimes. So, you know, it could be a little something going on.
Which is scary, right? And it's funny because while we're talking to you, you know, and then we're going to go into the questions.
Right.
My dermatologist works closely with my OBGYN.
Okay.
I was diagnosed with female pattern hair loss, which is AKA androgenic alopecia, mm-hmm. hormonal hair loss. Right. And so, you know,
right.
We kind of have to work together to figure out this girl is out of whack.
Let's
figure out. I've been on hormone replacement. I mean, temporary, just to see if they can kick me back into gear.
Right.
Like, I'm in denial. I'm still there. I have to be honest. I'm like, no, this doesn't. I mean, because stuff is still working properly.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And feeling better than ever, to be honest. I mean, you know, I have a pretty healthy lifestyle, I would like to think, you know.
Right.
I'm just like, what is going on? So it's funny that you talk about perimenopause happening sooner, but how many years of perimenopause do you experience before you actually kick into full menopause?
Exactly. That's a great question. And it varies from person to person, but it's also a pretty big range. So it can be anywhere from a couple years to 10 years until someone reaches menopause.
I'm not doomed.
Right. No, not at all. And it doesn't have to be doomed. But that's what I really wanted to empower women to. Like, it doesn't have to be this, like, oh my God, it's a big bad wolf. Like, we can just, like, okay, be aware, be, you know, kind of know what's happening, what's coming. Mm-hmm. So you'll know, arm yourself with the information. And then you can, again, be proactive about, you know, still feeling, living your best life as you're going through these craziness.
Right. Question, and then I'm gonna stop being selfish. You have to prepare for what's coming. So I'm all about preventative treatment and maintenance.
Right.
One thing that we had a dermatologist on here talking about, if you want to freeze your face and look the same way you look 10 years from now, you need to start Botox, you need to start fillers. People think you start Botox and fillers when you're wrinkled and dingled.
Right.
So what can I start to do from now to make sure that I live my best life 10 years from now?
Right. So yeah, you mentioned, you know, living, you know, healthy. Diet, our diet makes such a big difference. I'm sure you've heard that from a dermatologist also. That makes such a difference in regards to really focusing on getting our gut health in order, because our gut actually is where our hormones can regulates the balance of our hormones.
Right.
So we're eating good things, putting good things in our body, that helps balance the hormones and basically also decreases inflammation. So certainly eating healthy, those green leafy vegetables, all that good stuff, as well as exercise. We got to move our bodies. Movement is so important. Yeah. So those are the two big things. And the other thing that I also encourage women that I think really helps, you know, not only with the do the transition, but just kind of leading up to that, really making self-care a routine, like an everyday thing, not just here and there, not, you know, go to do whatever for, you know, that day and that's it. Like, you need to do something every day that brings you joy.
Okay, that was my question. How do you define self-care? Because everyone defines it differently.
Right. Yeah. So it may look different for everybody, but you basically want to do things that bring you joy. And also, essentially, you know, have a space that you can sit and reflect with yourself and not be bogged down by everybody else's issues.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay. I would love to go into that in more detail. You got to come back.
Yes.
First question. And it's funny because it's kind of into what we're talking about. My vagina is dry. Not me.
Let's clarify.
This is not me. But this is right. The question.
Yes.
What can I do about vaginal dryness?
Great question. Yeah. So vaginal dryness, and you know, it's typically something that happens. It can start in perimenopause. There's some women who get vaginal dryness often having a baby too, because of the decrease in estrogen after, you know, the release of hormones. Everything's kind of going back in balance. So there's different reasons for vaginal dryness. So there are multiple things that you can do to help with vaginal dryness. I personally kind of start with more natural things.
Okay.
And coconut oil is one natural thing that I recommend a lot. You know, regular old organic, you know, go to the grocery store, get some more coconut oil and use that as a vaginal moisturizer. And you can actually, I mentioned this in my book, you can actually make a coconut oil suppository where you get a little mini ice cube tray, pour it in, freeze it up, and then pop one in your vagina while you're sleeping. Put a little towel down because sometimes it may seep out a little bit, but basically it's helping to moisturize your vaginal walls as you're sleeping.
Wow.
Yeah.
Hold on. Now, how big is this ice cube now? Are we talking
pop? So the mini ice cube tray.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Right.
Now let's talk about the coconut oil. Now, if you're not a fan of the coconut smell,
right?
Is there like aromatherapy going on down there with that coconut oil, or it doesn't affect the smell?
And it typically doesn't affect the smell.
Okay.
So So yeah, so that's one natural thing. Another thing that is out there that you can get online, it has hyaluronic acid in it. And you probably know this, speaking to dermatologists, hyaluronic acid is a very common ingredient that's hydrating. So they actually have it in a vaginal suppository. So you can also use that as an option. You basically pop one in those at like every couple of days to help moisturize those vaginal walls.
Is there a brand that you recommend?
There's a website called HelloBonafide.com. And it's called Reverie, and I have no, you know, connection. I don't get paid for any of this. So this is what I say in the office. I name every little, you know, possible thing.
Right.
So yes, it's called Reverie. So that is another option. And then we talk about different prescriptions, in regards to vaginal estrogen. There's creams, there's tablets, there's rings, with estrogen in it to help with that vaginal dryness. So there's different options.
Right. And for me, just out of curiosity, how do you know if you actually have vaginal dryness? Like, what's the real medical?
Right. So it may be different for some people. So some women can just notice just vaginal, like just feel irritated all the time, or just, just more so irritation.
Right.
Or if they are having sex and it's hurting. Like I've had women say it feels like sandpaper is in there. Mm-hmm. Like I feel so dry as a bone. So a lot of times it's noticed when they're trying to, you know, have sex.
So, what's actually happening in the body that's causing this at this point?
So at this point is the lack of estrogen. The estrogen levels are decreasing. Mm-hmm. Our estrogen is it helps with moisturizing our vaginal walls. Mm-hmm. So as our estrogen is decreasing, that moisture is decreasing. Our vasculature, the blood vessels to the vaginal walls, are decreasing. Mm-hmm. Our estrogen also helps with balancing the pH in our vaginas. Right. So sometimes that imbalance of pH makes it more irritated. So all that, you know, combined can make it feel dry, or make it dry.
Right. And are there other telltale signs that your estrogen levels are dipping before you get to a sandy vagina?
Not necessarily. Like, you know, there's some women who may not have like the hot flashes, or may not have the mood swings that some women get. So it really kind of depends. And the thing also I would like to say in regards to, you know, comparing vaginal symptoms with like things like hot flashes during the perimenopause and menopause symptoms, is really important if you do experience these vaginal symptoms to address them now, because as you get further along, you know, to menopause and further out menopause, the vaginal symptoms can get worse. Yeah. As opposed to the hot flashes, those typically get better as you get further out.
Oh, okay. So now we're staying in, because this is what people want to know. We're staying about the whopping. We're talking about sex.
Right.
Someone who said they're 40 and she's like horny all the time.
Yes.
Is the old adage that the older you get, you know, or for women, actually, we're in our sexual prime, kind of like in our mid 30s or in our 40s. Is that actually true scientifically?
It is true for some women. It's not an every woman thing. So, you know, some women can get that boost that is the boost of estrogen, essentially increases that libido or that desire. Some women get that, but there are others who do not.
Oh,
and
wow.
Their libido go
completely down.
Completely down. Completely down.
Wow. So let's talk about, what can a woman do if she feels like she's completely horny all the time? Are there, not that there's a treatment, and I don't think that that's a bad thing.
Right. I must say, that's not be a bad thing.
But I'm assuming as a woman, right, I'm just making this assumption, if you're horny all the time, that means that you are lubricated all the time. So is there anything that we can do just to make sure that we're fresh and clean, clear and under control, you know, during that time? Or?
Yeah, besides just, keeping it clean, like there's really the right, it's really,
just let it flow.
Right.
Women who are having the opposite effect, you've mentioned it already, if you're dealing with a drier vagina, but low libido does not necessarily mean dry vagina, correct?
No, exactly. Low libido can be for other reasons.
If you're experiencing a low libido, explain what a libido is for people in the back.
Yeah. So libido essentially is our sexual desire, our desire to want to have sex, essentially. Okay. So yeah, low libido is, oh my gosh, like it can be a multitude. It's a multifactorial thing. Mm-hmm. And what I typically say for a lot of women, the top reason is I call it TDT, too damn tired. Two and a half tire. So we are, you know, men are different. I say men are, that saying, men is from Mars, women are from Venus. Yes. I mean, it's so true. When men are microwaves, we are ovens. It takes us a while to warm up. Right. We men are visual. They can just look at you and like they're ready to go. We have to be emotionally. We have to be mentally. We have to be into it.
Right.
So there's multi factors that affect us. And if we have so many things going on in regards to family, in regards to work, is whatever we're doing business wise, that's distractions. And that kind of brings our energy to those areas. We don't want to have sex. We want to go take a nap.
Take a nap. Man, I know men are not listening, but please, ladies, send this to your man, your husband, your partner, whoever.
Right.
No, like, if you want me to get there, if you want me to get excited, then I'm going to need you to just help me out.
Exactly. So, yeah. So it's mostly, you know, it can be a lot of different things. You know, stress, you know, increase in stress, all those things can affect our libido. So really we have to unpack what is going on in that woman's life to figure out, you know, what is actually happening.
And as a board certified OBGYN, how do you unpack, how do you actually figure out what it is, what's the cause, and then what are like maybe one or two treatments?
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot of just conversation, to be honest, like really kind of figuring out, okay, what are you doing, you know, work-wise? How's work? How much stress are you having at work? What about family? Do you have help? Like what are your extra stressors? Mm-hmm. Then we look at medications, like if she's on medication that may potentially decrease her libido, like women, you know, just in general can be on an antidepressant and not know that the antidepressant that they're on decreases their libido.
Their sex drive, right?
Right, right. So looking at that as a possibility, medical illnesses, if they have diabetes or high blood pressure, all those things kind of impact our, you know, desire. So looking at just kind of everything, just more interview, you know, just kind of communication to figure out what things are going on in her life. Obviously, if she's, you know, an older woman and, you know, we always talk about our hormones, obviously. Mm-hmm. So it's hormones is something that we typically do. I normally check hormones, not necessarily, because there's some women who have low hormones and still have a great libido.
Right.
So it may not give me that, you know, a whole lot of information. So once I kind of unpack all that, we talk about, you know, again, looking at integrative things that we can, you know, potentially decrease your stress. Because again, stress is usually a large factor.
Okay.
So definitely looking at things that we can do to kind of unload that. And then there are, you know, there's that website I mentioned before with the Reverie. They also have a supplement called Restella that helps with increasing the blood flow to the genital area that ultimately helps with increasing libido. So I've recommended that before.
And so Restella is not something that you necessarily have to take if you're already experiencing a low libido. You can take that and it's safe. It's just kind of just pulling the blood to your...
Right. Exactly. Right.
Okay.
Yeah. So...
I was gonna ask if you had any more of those like coconut suppository tips, you know, libido. So another question that I have here is, how do I prevent bladder leaks?
That's a good question. So everybody, in regards to just in general, our bladder is certainly connected, you know, is right above our vaginas. Mm-hmm. So bladder symptoms can also be associated with a decrease in our hormones.
Okay.
So also being aware of that. And Kegel exercises, Kegel exercises, basically actively activating those pelvic floor muscles.
Okay.
So you want to kind of squeeze and lift those vaginal muscles or pelvic floor muscles to help strengthen those muscles.
Right.
And that can ultimately help with decreasing bladder leakage. I have had, you know, recommended pelvic floor physical therapy, which women are like, what do you mean physical therapy for my vagina? Like that exists. So yes, I recommend that a lot, that sometimes with, you know, women, different women in general, pelvic floor physical therapy can help a lot. If they've done Kegel exercise and not really have noticed a difference, then potentially going that route. And then obviously if it's getting to be a big issue and causing a quality, you know, decrease in the quality of the life, then, you know, seeing a urogynecologist and maybe potentially looking at different procedures that may help them too. So really just kind of being proactive about doing your Kegel exercise exercises and strengthening those pelvic floor muscles is important.
So whoever asked that question, there is hope. There is hope.
Yes. Yes.
Bladder leaks. There are a lot of treatments out there. Please go see your OBGYN. Let them know. Be honest.
And exactly.
And tighten that. Get it.
Right.
Get that floor tight. Now, I have a question, which is still in that realm. Now, I don't know if you're familiar with like the yoni eggs. It's all over the media. Is that really effective or do you believe in it? Let's ask that way.
Well, I have a yoni egg. I have one. I don't have it in now.
So now when you say you have a yoni egg, do you have your own yoni egg line of products?
No. Okay. I don't, but I have used it in the past. So I do believe that they are helpful in regards to, you know, making you focus. And, you know, again, doing this, you know, basically using the yoni egg to help with you doing the Kegel exercises.
Right.
So I do think yoni eggs actually are helpful. So
and often can someone use the yoni eggs to tighten up that pelvic floor?
I mean, they can do it every day.
Oh, okay.
So I think the most important thing to know, though, is to when you are tightening, make sure you also relaxing. Because if you do this tightening and not relaxing too much, that can actually cause a problem. So that can constrict those muscles and make, you know, cause pelvic pain and pain with intercourse and things like that. So you really, when you're tightening, also make sure you're relaxing also. So,
gotcha.
Yeah.
Now this is a jump. This is a leap. Now the next question is, do pineapples actually work to make your vagina taste sweeter? Yes.
Yeah. I don't have any scientific evidence of that.
There we go. Ladies, stop dousing pineapple juice, please, 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 please. There is no scientific evidence. Now, your heart. Now, if it boosts your confidence, though,
right? I mean,
right down there is sweeter now.
Exactly. Right.
Exactly. You go ahead and keep doing your thing with the pineapples. So there's no scientific evidence. Now, is there anything out there that works for kind of like improving the, let's just say, the cosmetic elegance of your vagina?
Yeah, I mean. The vagina is the vagina. Like I feel like when we like talking about making it smell sweeter, making it smell like lavender, making it look pretty, like, I mean,
it is what it is.
It is what it is, right? Like, you have, let's embrace what our vagina is, what it looks like, and go with that. Like, we don't have to, it's not supposed to smell like lavender, not supposed to smell like pineapple, it's supposed to smell like a vagina. And now, obviously, if it's a mild offensive odor, then that's a problem that we have to. Exactly. That's a conversation we need to have. But, you know, if it smells like a vagina, then we need to just accept and embrace and go with that.
Right. Now, it's funny. I have a question because I don't know if I read this somewhere. It's years ago, whatever. But something about scientifically, and I could be wrong, that men are attracted to the natural scent and smell of your vagina, like something about what it does to their mind or something like that. I don't know how realistic that is, but when I was reading the article, it was basically saying, don't mask the smell of your actual BO because that is what's luring people to it. Now, you tell me.
Yeah, I don't...
Tell me.
I'm not familiar with that. You know, there's things called pheromones where, you know, our body gives off different scents and things like that. Pheromones. Yes. Yes. Right. So, but yeah, I mean, I haven't had any, you know, research that gives a lot of like, you know, support to say like, oh, if you change, you know, your body odor, your vaginal, the way it smells, that would actually make a difference.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now the next, so we're kind of deviating a little bit. And the next question is, when should I stop using birth control?
Good question.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's funny because when some women, you know, going through the changes, going to do different things, I've, you know, sometimes have recommended birth control pills. They're like, well, I'm 40. Like, should I be on birth control pills?
Right, right.
So it is okay to be on birth control pills, particularly up to the age of 55.
Oh. Okay.
As long as you are a good candidate, meaning that you don't have like, you know, uncontrolled high blood pressure, you know, uncontrolled diabetes, you don't have any other illnesses or, you know, disorders that may potentially increase your risk of being on birth control. So it really kind of depends on, you know, what you actually need in regards right. to birth. And there's other birth control methods, right? There's IUDs, which I love also. I recommend those all the time. Yeah. IUD is another option, especially as we're getting older. We don't want to remember to take a pill every day. An IUD is more of a long-term, contraception that you can just put in, don't have to worry about it for 5 or 10 years. Mm-hmm. So that's potentially an option. And essentially, you know, until the IUD you can use up until menopause. So it really kind of depends on the person, but yeah, I mean, you can particularly, there's some women who, you know, can definitely be on birth control pills into their mid 40s up to 50. So,
right. And so you guys do use birth control pills for other treatments besides just, you know, pregnancy prevention.
Right. Yes.
What are some of those treatments? I'm just curious.
Yeah. So yeah, definitely other than pregnancy prevention, PMS, premenstrual syndrome. So if you having a lot of, you know, mood swings, bloating, things like that. A lot of times we put, recommend birth control pills.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. So, and then also just with perimenopausal symptoms, someone who's not menopausal yet, still having regular periods, but they're having menopausal symptoms. There have been times where I have recommended birth control pills. Now I typically, again, first start with integrative, you know, diet, nutrition, exercise, that type of stuff first, and then birth control pills would be kind of the next thing. But that certainly is something, an option to help with those perimenopausal symptoms too.
Okay. And now I do have a kind of like a second question to that. Is there a direct correlation or any correlation at all with birth control pills and infertility?
No. Mm. So it's funny because I personally was on birth control pills from the age of 16 to 35.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. So I was on it for a long time.
What?
Long time. And so what I say, and I say that, and I tell that to my patients, I'm like, yeah, I understand that, you know, it's got someone who like, they want to take a break, they want to affect their fertility, which I totally understand, but it's not, there's really no correlation. Now I do say that though, if you are on birth control pills for a long time, like myself, if you, you know, got off of it and wanted to start to have a family, it may take you a little bit longer than normal. So for me, it probably took me a little over a year, as opposed to someone who wasn't on anything, that it may take them, you know, a few months, you know, so it really kind of depends. But yeah, I always say that, you know, you being on birth control pills or whatever birth control in general, it should not affect your fertility. And again, there's also different methods, like the depot shot is something that if someone wanted to start a family after using that, it takes them a little bit even longer after stopping that in order to, you know, reach for their fertility to return. So it just really kind of depends.
Okay. And that's taking longer is really for the body to kind of rebalance itself or.
Right.
Okay.
Exactly. Exactly. Yep. Yep.
And it's funny because now the next question is still within that same realm of, if I'm having issues with infertility or I haven't conceived, what can I do to increase my fertility? Are there certain hacks or treatments out there?
Certain hacks or treatments with fertility. I mean, first and foremost, health, like keeping yourself healthy or making sure you're healthy. Because again, if you are, you know, eating an unhealthy diet, you know, a lot of processed foods, not exercising, all those things are causing internal inflammation, as well as if you have a very high stress life, like if you're very stressed, also increasing your cortisol, your stress hormone cortisol, that's causing more inflammation. So all of that can basically impede you becoming pregnant because it's causing this inflammatory response and it's just not getting a good sense of your body wanting to, you know, create a human being inside, because your body is like, I'm stressing here. Like we don't need to do anything else.
We don't need a baby right now.
Right, exactly. Exactly. So I think first and foremost, making sure you are eating healthy and exercising and, you know, being your healthiest self. I usually say be your best self before you become pregnant. And then obviously, if you're having other issues in regards to your periods, if your periods are irregular, really talking to your GYN about that and diving into if there's anything else going on, like polycystic ovarian syndrome, which is a condition where you can have an imbalance of the hormones that can cause your cycles to be irregular, and that can potentially affect your fertility. Mm-hmm. So it just really kind of depends.
Right. Okay. So now I'm trying to lump these together so that they all make sense, because they're all kind of all over the place. So we're shifting gears a little bit, and we're going into something called BRCA mutations, which is actually my first time hearing about this.
Okay.
So what are they actually? And then should I get tested was the question.
Okay. So BRCA, we call it BRCA. So there's BRCA1 and BRCA2. Okay. These are genetic mutations that predispose women for breast cancer and ovarian cancer.
Oh, okay.
So if, you know, everyone, all of us have a lifetime risk of developing breast cancer. So probably about, I would say maybe 2% chance. It's like just in general, the general population. Once you have one of these genes, that percentage increases to like 20%. Like there, that it dramatically increases your percentage of developing these breast ovarian cancers. So a lot of times we talk about breast cancer genetics or genetic screening if you have a strong family history of breast cancer or ovarian cancer. Mm. So that's when we typically kind of delve into that. So if you have, you know, on your mom's side, a mom or aunts, or even also your dad's side, we count the dad's side too. Okay. So if you have a lot of aunts and aunts, or even a male in the family with breast cancer, we would recommend someone getting BRCA testing or genetic testing to kind of see what if they have the gene. A lot of times with the gene, though, we recommend if a woman came in and said that her mom had breast cancer, I would recommend her mom to get the genetic testing. Because okay. If her mom is negative for the BRCA gene, then most likely the daughter, my patient, is negative too.
It does make sense.
Yeah. Right. So we typically recommend the person who actually has the cancer get tested. However, if that person is either, you know, not no longer with us, or, you know, just doesn't want to get the testing or doesn't get the testing, then you can get the testing yourself.
So now, God forbid it comes back positive for them having the gene, then what's
right. The next step? Next step. Exactly. So the next step after that essentially is figuring out where you are in fertility.
Mm-hmm.
Because again, the breast cancer gene is associated with breast and ovarian cancer.
Wow.
So we have to talk about your, so you can be one or two things. You can be just more vigilant. It depends on how old you are too. If you're, you know, obviously early, less than 40, you still want to start a family, things like that. Being more vigilant about your screening. So getting your mammograms, getting a breast MRI, things like that, being more vigilant about getting your screenings. And then once you reach after 40, once you're done with fertility, we can talk about doing a mastectomy, removing your breast, talk about removing your ovaries. So it really kind of depends on, and you can actually remove your breast even before that. And so it's a conversation that you need to have with your,
right.
You know, your gynecologist to see which, you know, which realm you want to go to, because there's some women like, I just take them off. I don't want to run the risk and just take them off now.
Right.
Exactly. Versus waiting until you're, you know, if you're done with the family and you want to breastfeed and all that type of stuff, then you can do after that. So it just really kind of depends, but definitely having those, you know, conversations and just being definitely vigilant about your screenings is important.
Okay. So I have a few more, but I know we're coming on time. So I'm going to ask one more question, and then we're just going to kind of segue into a few other things.
Okay.
So do I need to worry about irregular periods?
Just in general?
That's the question. It's
okay.
So I guess you can unpack it how you would or answer.
Right. Yeah. So not everyone will experience irregular periods. I mean, just in general, just like generally, some women.
This person is having irregular periods. So is it a problem?
Is it a problem? Yeah.
It's something they should worry about.
Right. So it depends on how old is she? How old is she? Right. Because irregular periods after 40 can be pretty normal. I mean, that can go along with perimenopause.
Okay.
If you're less than 40 and having irregular periods, is it polycystic ovarian syndrome? Is it associated with that? And again, polycystic ovarian syndrome can also predispose women to developing diabetes. So if she has some that along those lines that she needs to be aware of, that she needs to, you know, unpack that as a possibility. So it really kind of depends on her age.
That's a loaded question.
Yeah.
Right. Which means you can literally just do a whole segment on irregular periods at different stages in your life.
Exactly. Right.
I'm sorry, whoever asked. I hope that was enough, guys. I hope. Just know that don't worry too much if you're over a certain age or in your perimenopause, but go see a gynecologist.
Exactly. And thank you, Beryl. Because I'm going to say that. Just go to your doctor and tell him or her.
Tell them and they can look further into the
situation. Exactly. Exactly. Right.
So now I want to really talk about some things that you have going on. And I'm really excited because, I mean, you're really dope. And I know I can tell just from your aura and your vibe and everything. So number one, you have a podcast and it's called Midlife-ish. So
yes. Tell
us about the podcast and where can they find it?
Yes, it's called Midlife-ish, Slay Menopause Through Mindful Living. I just launched it last week. I am super, super, super excited. So basically, you can get it on all, your favorite podcast listings, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, all of those. And it's really something that I want women to have a platform to listen to, because we have this, a lot of women have this like, oh, I have to beat menopause. Like, why do I, I have to run away. And right. I want to change the mindset that we don't have to beat menopause. We can slay in menopause. Like, let's live our best life as we're going through this transition, even though it feels like we're going crazy, but right. We can still slay in the process.
Right.
So, yeah. So every Wednesday it drops on your one of your favorite podcasts.
You have a customer or a listener right here with me, honey, because I'm trying to figure out how I could be a baddie for life. Okay. A baddie in my 50s and 60s.
Yes, honey. Yes.
We trying to stay a baddie over here. So internally, externally, right?
Yes.
So also talk about this coaching program that you have for entrepreneurs.
Yes. Yes. I'm so excited. So I have my coaching online group coaching program called The Power of the Pause. So I want women to harness the power of this transition and basically help professional women over 40 who are struggling with menopausal symptoms, perimenopausal symptoms, want them to eliminate them without feeling stuck and overwhelmed, so, and use integrative strategies to do this so they can live in their brilliance.
So she's trying to help you be with that.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm launching that at the end of March and I'm super excited about that.
Right. Be a baddie and a boss, okay?
Yes,
so you have to follow Dr. Joyelle Ballard because she is going to help you not only get your life, honey, but keep your life after a certain age. And that's what for some of us, we trying to figure that out. So last question for you about the platform Hair Scripts. Just a reminder, we are a community overall. We are a social community that connect women like myself. That's all about women's health, but also hair loss, etc., to dermatologists, trichologists, OBGYNs, and just other hair restoration specialists. So what are your thoughts about this platform and this community overall?
Oh, I love it. Like, it's just, like you said, women's health, obviously, I'm a fan. Like, it starts from our crown, right? Like, how we feel about our hair, how we feel about our skin, and how we feel inside of us, from the inside out. How do we feel in our skin? So this platform is awesome in regards to just kind of, rallying around women and supporting them, educating them, because education, knowledge is power. Yeah. So definitely providing that information, arming women with that information so they can feel great from the head to their toe.
Thank you so much. Well, Dr. Joyelle Ballard, can you let everyone know where they can find you online and then remind us where you're located?
Yes. So I'm here in Maryland. So you can find me on Facebook and Instagram at Dr. Joyelle, DrJoyel. Not on Twitter so much, but I'm there too a little bit. And I'm Joyelle Ballard 1 on Twitter. And then my website is drjoyelle.com.
All righty. Well, thank you so much for joining us.
You're welcome.
And she's going to be back, y'all. She's going to be back. Okay.
I'll be back.
Take care.
Thank you.